Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gridiron Chefs with your host, James Greenwood.
Look, guys, the comparison between between Jamarcus Russell and Cam Newton are completely baseless. Cam Newton has 10 times the work ethic and is 10 times more athletic than Jamarcus Russell will ever be.
And Tyrone Powell.
So, all in all, if you're going to compare him to Brady, you're going to compare him to Manning, those two are arguably are automatic going into the Hall of Fame. But come on, man, this guy has done work from 99 to about 2008-2009 before he got shipped out.
Here on SportsCityChef.com.
Good afternoon, Sports City. It is the Gridiron Chefs. It's that time again where we talk football for the people. I'm your host, James Greenwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host with the most, Mr. TP Timeless. How are you doing today, TP?
Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive, man. SportsCityChefs.com, the website. Thank you for everybody that's been checking us out. Some awesome numbers this week. Thank you to everybody that's been out there checking us out, coming to get this. This is in Sports City. I'm happy. Definitely speaking on behalf of Sports City. I'm ready to get things rolling in this kitchen. A lot of topics to talk about for this upcoming Sunday with the NFL matchups, and I'm ready to go.
All right. We also have another chef here in the kitchen, Mr. Matt Palmer. Matt, man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on the show this afternoon. Actually, it's only 9 a.m. out here on the West Coast, but I'm excited for tomorrow's week 11 action, and let's have a good show.
All right. Well, we're going to start, as we start every single week, with the Thursday night game. Thursday night game, Buffalo Bills pull up what can be considered an upset against the Miami Dolphins in a tough divisional matchup. Buffalo Bills are not going away as they tie up the record between them and the Dolphins. TP, what were your thoughts on the matchup? Does this show a spark? Are the Buffalo Bills not dead yet? What do you think?
Oh, they're dead. The reason why I say that is because they won that game all of the special teams play, period. I mean, I got to give this defense some credit in slowing down Reggie Bush and Daniel Thomas. They bottled that running game up, and Tannehill didn't really get off to the game that he wanted to have. But four field goals and a punt return on a touchdown, I'm not really giving that offense too much of a lift. I thought I could see more Spiller and Jackson and also Stevie Johnson. As much as I respect that offense and want to give them a lot of accolades, if you will, they just aren't getting it done. And you know, it's a fortunate situation that they were at home and knocking off a Dolphins team where we really couldn't figure out if they were contenders or pretenders. I think both of those teams are going to be in the cellar of the AFC East if things don't change now.
All right, Matt, what were your thoughts on the Thursday night game? Is there anything that stuck out to you? And I guess the more important question is, are the Bills or the Dolphins dead yet, or are they still considered, you know, real contenders for a playoff spot?
Well, in the AFC East, I think the New York Jets are the ones that are dead meat. So I think, you know, Miami really disappointed, I think, just from the standpoint of, you know, on last week's show, Tennessee at Miami, I think, you know, most of us, I think aside from one of us, all picked Miami to beat Tennessee, and they just got slaughtered at home by the Tennessee Titans, who we all, you know, said had this horrible defense. And that was a good ball game. Miami showed moxie at the end. You know, Tannehill had it. They pinned him down inside the 1 yard line. Like TP said, special teams was huge. Ryan Lindell hit four field goals, and They got a clutch punt in the fourth quarter and pinned Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins offense down inside the one. And they had to go 99 yards, down 19-14 with 4 minutes to go to try to get the W. And inevitably, Tannehill ended up throwing the game-losing interception to Jarius Byrd. And Buffalo got a big win at home. I agree with TP. I mean, special teams and defense, I mean, they, like he said, they bottled up Reggie Bush. And C.J. Spiller was pretty impressive. But the Bills, I thought, I was kind of disappointed with their kind of conservative approach with a 5-point lead in the fourth quarter. I thought they should have been a little bit more aggressive trying to move the chains, and they just seemed like they were content to punt and play defense. And I think they were fortunate to come out with the win, but I think they're very much alive in a weak AFC.
And I agree. If you look at the rest of the schedule for the Buffalo Bills, I mean, after they go up against the Colts next week, they've got a very easy schedule coming off the last five games. I mean, they've got Jacksonville, the Rams, and the Seahawks all in Buffalo. Now, we know that Seahawks can be a tough team, but don't think they've won a game on the road yet. And that's something that's really telling about the mentality of the Seattle Seahawks. The Rams would also have to go out east to Buffalo in the later part of the season, and Jacksonville is just a team that can't beat anybody. So those are three wins that I think can be safely put in their column, or, well, maybe not the Seahawks. Maybe they do actually step up and play a game on the road, but for the most part, those are three games that are very winnable for them. Then they play the Dolphins again, a team they just beat, so it's not inconceivable that they beat them. And then the sorry Jets, a team that's playing like the worst team in the league, is going to be their Week 16 opponent, who, honestly, the Jets are probably looking more forward to a better draft position at that point than all that interested in winning a football game. So, in all honesty, they have a serious chance of, if they can win the next week against the Colts, they have a realistic chance of running the table if they can beat the Colts next week. TP, would you like to rebut, or should we just move on?
I don't agree with that, and I like the fact that Seattle could definitely beat the Bills. And you saying the Jets are the worst team in football right now, I know you don't like the Jets, but cut it out. Cut it out. Jacksonville could compete for that title. Cleveland could compete for that title. The Kansas City Chiefs can compete for that title. Don't throw the Jets there. Even though the Jets are struggling to do things right now, there are other teams that are doing much worse than what they are doing.
Well, okay, I forgot about the Chiefs, but you got to admit that there are very few teams right now that are playing worse football than the New York Jets. There are very few. And Jacksonville, I would give you that one, too. They're right up there in the conversation. But this is a team that is once again imploding. And I think that this this is as good of a segue as we're going to get towards the next topic, which is once again, people want to be talking about Tim Tebow. Basically what happened is they're 12, that's nearly a quarter of Tim Tebow's teammates, both on offense and on defense. That's 12 players went to the media anonymously and said, Mark Sanchez is a starter. Tim Tebow is awful. We can't win playing his style of offense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is a team with a bad quarterback. I'm not going to lie. Before Tim Tebow came along, Mark Sanchez was by far the most overrated quarterback in the game. And it wasn't even close. he was bad. He was terrible. I have no idea why they gave him the extension, to be completely honest with you. It was more of a, hey, I'm sorry we went after Peyton Manning. Don't feel bad kind of thing. And they kind of pigeonholed themselves into a bad quarterback for the next 3 years. But even as bad as Mark Sanchez is, and as bad as he's been playing, his teammates still say, please don't send Tim Tebow into the game. Now, the first question is this. Is this going to be finally the end of this Tim Tebow nonsense? And Matt, I'll go first to you on this one.
Well, you know, In regards to Mark Sanchez being the most overrated QB in the league, I mean, this is a guy that has played in two AFC championship games in his first two seasons. And, I mean, granted, those particular seasons, 2009 and 10, they had an outstanding defense, solid running game, weaponry, you know, and they had Brian Schottenheimer, who at the time had the pieces to allow Sanchez to, you know, he gave him the best chance to succeed with designed rollouts, and he just played to his strengths, short throws to Keller and, you know, who they had at the time, Braylon Edwards, and now they're just a mess. You know, there's no Santonio Holmes. They don't have anybody to throw the football to, and, you know, I time said he doesn't think the Jets are the worst team in the league. Jacksonville might be, and Jacksonville very well might be. I'll tell you one thing: the Kansas City Chiefs are not. They can play ball. Like they all but gave me a heart attack Monday night. But the Jets. See, this reminds me a lot of what happened with Denver last year. They handed Tebow the football. They had Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas, two guys that nobody had heard of. They had Willis McGahee. They had a stout running game and a strong defense. And I can tell you from personal experience as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, Tim Tebow is a pain in the ass to corral in the backfield. You know, his escapability is among the best in the game, and he's not the greatest passer and distributor of the football, but he finds a way. He makes plays. And I'm not saying the guy, you know, I mean, they're a 3-7 ball club or whatever it may be, and they're not a playoff team. But I think that it's definitely a mess. I mean, I think Rex Ryan's probably going to be fired on New Year's Day, and Mark Sanchez isn't going to win games for you without, you know, defense, a stout running game, a good offensive line, and weaponry to throw the football to. But I think at this point, you know, and Rex Ryan came out in the media this week and said, we didn't sign Tim Tebow to be our starting quarterback. But at this point, what's the risk in giving him a shot, giving him a chance, seeing if he can light a fire under some of those guys and see if maybe they can rally? I mean, they're not dead in the water. The AFC's weak. A 9-7 team will definitely get in, and so they're still alive mathematically. And I think if I were Rex Ryan, that would be the approach. And as stagnant as they've been offensively, why not give Tebow a shot? And I don't, you know, I think it's Antonio Cromartie. I know was one of those aforementioned guys that you said that came out and, you know, his own teammates don't like him, they hate him, and they say they can't win with him. Go find out. Go give him a try, because it sure as hell isn't working with Sanchez. So that's my take on the Jets.
All right, TP, what are your thoughts on that?
One, it's one season of him being in New York with a new team. Two, whoever were the 12 players that came out and stated it, why don't you be a man and put your name to it, since you're throwing his name under the bus? Don't be children. Be a grown man. You play a grown man sport, be a grown man. At the end of the day, why don't you guys look at yourselves that are calling him out and look at how you guys are performing? How do anybody on the Jets roster have the nerve to talk about Tim Tebow when they not performing? Do you see the Jets record right now? Are the Jets, like, 4-4 or 5-4 or 4-5, however, if they were sniffing around 500, these guys are suffering. And Reaven doesn't make that big of a difference. Yes, he is one of the best, if not the best corner in the game. But let's be real. 12 of you got the nerve to come out there and talk about Tim Tebow when he hasn't even been in, let's just say, 35 to 40% of the plays. That's nowhere near fair. Like, that's nowhere near fair. And I'm not even a big advocate of Tim Tebow, like, because I was actually one of the guys that despised Tim Tebow coming out of college. I couldn't wait for him to come out of college because it was like he was cheating just because he was just bigger than a lot of linebackers in college football. He would just run the ball and, you know, take on hits, and it was like, I want to see him do that in the pros, which he still does that a little bit. But to blame a lot of this on Tim Tebow, that is nowhere near fair. They don't have a weapon in their receiving core. Yes, they have names. Yes, they have Keller, Hill at times. But they don't have an offensive structure for them to just say, you know what, we'll blame all of this on Tim Tebow, and we'll be happily ever after, and Rex can keep his job, and our defense and our offense, this, that, and the third. That is enormously bullcrap. Like, enough is enough. Y'all all should step up and play some better football. Then y'all wouldn't be worried about a guy that just got traded there within a season, and you're trying to put everything on his shoulders. What
now,
would Jesus
I don't
do?
Think there, I don't,
what would yep, Jesus do?
Now,
solid,
I don't...
Solid take, TP.
I don't think that that they are blaming Tim Tebow for their situation. I think this is more of a combat against the media saying, hey, I know that you guys in the media would love to see Tim Tebow in there and playing. He sells newspapers. We get it. But he's just not that good of a football player.
That's
I don't think they're blaming him for their woes.
That's
and,
what's comical about New York, Roth, is the Jets are concerned with putting butts in seats, and they're concerned with the money aspect of it and not winning football games, and the Giants, the other team in town, is the team that has the ring.
And while that's true, and honestly, I'm going to agree with you, Matt, on another aspect. The Jets, as they're currently constructed, and I've been saying this for most of the year, and trust me, anybody who's been in Sports City long enough knows my feelings about Tim Tebow as a quarterback in the NFL. It should never have been. It should never be again. But if there was a place where Tim Tebow could run this gimmicky style offense that he ran in Denver and succeed with it, this is it. I mean,
I agree.
This is completely it. And yes, I know he does not have a Willis McGahee caliber running back there in Sean Green, but outside of that, this team is built for a team that should be able to run the football. And especially if you put in John Connor as more of a blocker for Tim Tebow, and hell, he's probably a better running back than Sean Green anyway, to be completely honest with you.
Agreed. As putrid as their passing game has been, why not go with Tebow and throw the ball 15 times a game and see if you can see what happens with running the ball, you know, 2-1 to your passing. You know, at this point, what why not? You know,
can I ask this question?
Can I ask this one question?
Who on the Jets roster scares you without Reaves not being there? Please tell me.
In the running game
or receiving passes, who scares you?
So you're leaving offensive linemen out of this because they've got some good offensive linemen.
Honest. I don't want to downplay offensive linemen. Let me not say anything bad about the guys that protect your quarterback. But I'm not talking about linemen here. Linemen are initially supposed to going to do their job and get their hands in the play and make no penalties or whatever. I'm not going to talk about Mangold and company. That you know, I'm talking about the guys that make plays. Who makes plays on this Jets team? Or who scares you to make plays? Of course they're going to be players that can pick up first downs and do the San Antonio Holmes point forward and drop the ball to just DeMarco first down. At the end of the day, there is nobody on that roster that is a threat, like a consistent play-by-play, series-by-series threat.
It's going to have to be coaching. And when Santonio Holmes went down, I think the Jets, you know, collectively realized that they're going to have to get – that their offense was very stagnant. They're going to have to get real creative in ways of moving the football. And I can tell you this, they have excellent special teams. You know, Rex Ryan's no dummy. They find ways, you know, gimmick plays and stuff like that to move the ball. They've lost a lot of ball games. I mean, they lost to Seattle last week. That's a nightmarish place to play. But okay. I remember that prior, you know, the week before they lost that game too. But when they're, you know, it was the Houston game, Houston at the Jets on Monday night, and everybody was expecting this slaughter. And the Jets came to play. They lost the ball game, but it wasn't easy because of coaching, because Rex Ryan, you know, trick plays in the punting game or in the field goal game, or and then obviously defense. Antonio Cromartie, most teams aren't going to throw his way. They're going to go after Kyle Wilson on the other side, but they just lack so many pieces elsewhere. So it's got to be for them to finish out 2012. Just, you know, Rex Ryan's ingenuity as far as, you know, smoke and mirrors and trying to beat you, because they're not going to be able to just line up and beat you. They don't have the personnel to do so. So it's going to have to be fake punts and kickoff returns and punt returns and, you know, trying to make a play on defense and then using the speed that you have offensively, Stephen Hill and Jedi McKnight, you know, running them, you know, reverses and trick plays and end arounds and things of that nature. They're going to have to do that, those kinds of things. And then Tebow, obviously, with the Wildcat. And I mean, they're going to just have to play by play by play, manipulate situations to try to benefit themselves. Because they don't have the personnel.
Let me answer your question with a question, TP. Who did they have that was a big threat when they got to the AFC Championship game those 2 years?
They had Braylon Edwards was actually making some plays that year. They also, I think LT was there. LT was making a difference, and actually his experience. I'm not going to say that he had, you know, a 1,000-yard season within him, but his experience helped carry. Plus, Sean Green was scary, you know, spelling LT too. So that 1-2 tandem. They don't have a running back that can come in there after Sean Green is out. I mean, as much as I would like Bilal Powell, because he's, you know, his last name is Powell, but he hasn't been a presence. They don't have anybody that can come off that bench and give that team a spark that they need. And, you know, Mark Sanchez is slowly adapting to the game, and him being a rookie and in his second year, they did well. Plus, Revis was on the field also, too. So you can't really downplay what Darrell Revis brought to that defense also. I actually have to give him the grade of best corner in the game, because they try to say Nnamdi, and Nnamdi's been getting cooked all season long. So I'm giving that to Revis. With them without Revis, you can see on how they pick on a lot of the secondary. If they're going at Cromartie and company, it's just a shame that the Jets are not trying to go out there and pick up players that are available or another team that are just sitting on a roster taking up space and not, you know, giving a team a full go. So people upstairs, if we want to blame Tannenbaum and company, we can, or looking at Rex Ryan to make things different for the team. There's a lot of finger pointing going on in New York, or better yet, New Jersey.
And I have to agree with you, TP. A lot of this goes to the top. This goes to Mike Tannenbaum, who should be fired at the end of the season. It goes to Rex Ryan, who should also be fired at the end of the season. He's a great defensive coordinator, and let's be honest, even with the lack of talent on the Jets roster after all those great veteran players like Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor, etc., left that roster after that second AFC Championship game. That defense has still been...
Those were good teams. Those were good teams.
They had a lot of good veteran talent on them for those last 2 years.
Chris Jenkins in the middle, that's an absolute nightmare to run against. Their run defense was stout. Revis, you know, and Cromartie, which side you want to throw to. They just lost so many guys defensively to injury, and you know, Tomlinson retiring. Sean Green would be a fantastic player in a two-back system, like a place like Carolina, if it was Stewart and Williams. He, you know, if he's getting 15 carries a game and Tomlinson's getting 15 carries a game, they're doing work. And DeBrickashaw, Ferguson, and Nick Mangold, and, I mean, they, at the time, those the 2009-2010 Jet teams, they were injury-free, and they could do two things that are going to win football games for you in December and January, and that's run the ball and play defense. We run the ball, and you don't.
And here's the thing, though. I mean, they did something very similar to what the Jets or to the what the Vikings did when they tried to acquire Brett Favre. They said, you know what, we're going to place a big bet that we are going to win the Super Bowl in the next couple of years. So we're going to take Brett Favre. We're going to put a lot of money into free agents who are on the back foot of their career. And that system makes for a couple of decent seasons. It very rarely turns into a Super Bowl. I think it's only turned into a Super Bowl once in the, that I've ever heard of.
Well, exactly.
And that was back with the Washington Redskins. Back with the old man's club that they pulled over in Washington, and that was it. That was the only time I've ever heard of that kind of strategy working, and it's showing with the Jets that it actually does more harm to your organization than good, as opposed to doing things the way they're supposed to be done, which is building through the draft. But I want to move on from the Tim Tebow topic and the New York Jets and how pathetic they are, and I want to move on to the injured quarterback situation. Last week, four starting quarterbacks went down, and in all likelihood, I believe at least two of them are not expected to play this week. Ben Roethlisberger is going to be considered out for at least the next 3 weeks in this season for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Byron Leftwich, who looked very pedestrian at best last week, is going to be the starter for the next at least 3 to 4 weeks. Jay Cutler went down with a concussion. He's also expected not to play for the Monday night game, but he might come back. He's listed as questionable. Alex Smith went down with an injury. He is expected to be back. He had limited participation on Friday in practice, so he's expected to be back, but there's still a chance they won't. And then finally, Michael Vick, who went down with a myriad of injuries, and right now it's looking more and more like Nick Foles is going to be the starter, not just for this week's game against the Washington Redskins, but for the foreseeable future as well. Now, TP, I'm going to come to you first with two guys in particular, because Jay Cutler, by all intents and purposes, is expected to probably be back next week. So we're not going to include him, and Alex Smith is expected to come back this week. Of the two quarterbacks, which one is screwed more? Is it going to be Byron Leftwich with his overextended throwing motion and a young offensive line? Or is it Nick Foles, who, with an offensive line that couldn't protect Michael Vick, so a more of a stagnant quarterback like Foles, is that a bigger problem for the Eagles? Are the Eagles done if Michael Vick does not come onto the field?
That's a very good question, because I think both quarterbacks are in crazy situations. One with the Pittsburgh Steelers situation, they really haven't gotten a run game going to take a lot of the pressure off of the quarterback. But they do get Mendenhall back, so that actually can help a little bit. But they're going up against the Baltimore defense, let alone this is a rivalry game. And I know they'll be trying to sink their cleats into the – well, I think this is in Baltimore, so They'll be wearing their turf shoes, if you will, but trying to get after Leftwich because they know that he has that slow wind-up release situation. And then Foles, I mean, he's young, and he's behind an offensive line that really can't block at all. And after the season that LeSean McCoy has had last year, it just shows how decimated, if you will, that offensive line is looking in Philadelphia. And they're going up against a Redskins team who's always in the hunt every single game, whether they lose or win. They're interesting to make these games happen because RG3 is as effective as he is on the field and giving his defense rest to come after a quarterback like that. So with that being said, I think that the Eagles are in a worse situation because Foles, I probably feel safe in saying he's not as mobile as a Michael Vick is. So if that pressure is to get to him, he's going to pick up a sack. So I think Leftwich, with his experience, I think that he'll do decent. I don't know if it'll be wonderful or great, but he'll fare off better than what Nick Foles will produce on the field, especially going into Washington, going up against the Redskins.
All right, Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Which of these two teams is going to be worse off with their starting quarterback missing? Is it going to be the Eagles without Mike Vick, or is it going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers without Ben Roethlisberger?
Well, I think all four quarterbacks that you mentioned, this is a very intriguing situation. But just regarding that particular question, I think Nick Foles has the potential to be a breath of fresh air for the Eagles. You know, I think that he threw a nice touchdown pass to, I think it was Jeremy Maclin in their win against Dallas last week. And, you know, he's a guy that I remember we were discussing this last week on the Chef Show, on Gridiron Chefs, that, you know, Vic out of the shotgun, you don't know if he's going to just take off left or take off right, and men are trying to block a particular spot, and next thing you know, Vic's getting hit because he's not, or he can't step up in the pocket, whatever. You know, Foles might be just a regular pocket passer that they could use, you know, to make DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and Brent Celek more effective. And LeSean McCoy is going to be LeSean McCoy. He's a fantastic player. I think the Steelers definitely are in much more trouble without who, in my estimation, is one of the best players in the game. Leftwich hasn't started a game since 2009. And his long windup is not good for what we do. We do a lot of jailbreak screens and the short passing game. And, you know, the entire ideology with Todd Haley was, you know, to get the ball out quick so that Roethlisberger avoids the hits. And this, I'll get, you know, when we get to this game, I'll get into this more in depth. But I think this is an opportunity where the Baltimore Ravens can't stop the run, and they're missing a lot of guys. I mean, no Ray Lewis, no Ladarius Webb. Jimmy Smith went down this week with a groin injury. He's out Sunday night. Haloti Ngata has been beat up all year long. Ed Reed's got a torn labrum, and they haven't been able to stop the run very well. With Mendenhall coming back and the depth that the Steelers have at running back with, you know, Isaac Redman and Jonathan Dwyer and Chris Rainey and, all, you know, Todd Haley's creativity, I think what the strategy is going to be try to run the ball, and then if Baltimore becomes desperate and wants to clog the box and put eight or nine guys in there and make sure that that's not, you know, make force Byron Leftwich to beat them. Although he's not the most mobile quarterback in the league, if we can block for him, Mike Wallace can run right past their secondary, and Leftwich throws a decent deep ball. And he missed him twice Monday night in the rain against Kansas City. And it's really something I hope, as a Steelers fan, that they got corrected in practice this week. You know, that rapport with Wallace and hopefully getting Antonio Brown back, that would be big also. But I think it definitely, just between Foles and Leftwich, I think it definitely hurts the Steelers more than it hurts the Eagles.
Really? Wow. I'm stunned. I'm really stunned. And plus, Leftwich has actually gone up against his Ravens defense. Not to say that it wasn't far off as, you know, 3 years of, you know, went by since he started. But Foles is going up against a division foe in the Redskins, and he looked pretty erratic in that last game up against Dallas at home. At home. He's on the road where he's going to have to show up to now.
Well, that's not as – I mean, both of those teams are, you know, a loss away from being done. The Steeler game is huge, huge game in the AFC, and it's truly a shame that it's missing so many of its premier stars that's made it the best rivalry in the NFL. No Roethlisberger, no Polamalu, no Ray Lewis, no Ladarius Webb. You know, all the possibly there's a lot of guys that are hurt. You know, Ed Reed's hurt. There's just the guys that have made it what it is aren't going to be there Sunday night, so it's going to be like a chess match, you know, who can out-coach the other and play field position and punt and try to play defense. And it's a gigantic ball game, you know. And Ben Roethlisberger was playing at an MVP level, whereas Michael Vick was getting his head kicked in every week. And, you know, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think Philadelphia and Washington are both 3-5 or 3-6 teams. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, I mean, they're not threats, either of them, in their conference with, you know, the powerhouses with Chicago and San Francisco, which in my estimation is a, you know, with Cutler being out, you're going to have Jason Campbell in there, and then there's very good possibility that you don't see Alex Smith Monday night, and it's Colin Kaepernick, and those are two of the best defenses in the NFL, and that, too, is a huge, huge ball game, just as Baltimore at Pittsburgh is. So the four quarterbacks being injured, I mean, I don't think his importance to the Philadelphia Washington game is anywhere near the scale of importance that Leftwich, Kaepernick, and Jason Campbell are going to be under.
Well, here's the thing that I'm going to say, and I actually agree with you on Matt with a couple of these things. I mean, first and foremost, one big problem that Mike Vick has is his height. And when you're talking about a pocket passer and a guy who's going to have to step up into the pocket when the rush comes in from the outside, his height becomes an issue. He's not that much taller than Drew Brees. So he's got to find a way to look over these 6'7" offensive linemen and find their guys doing crossing routes on the inside. It makes things a lot harder for Mike Vick if you force him to step into the pocket, as long as your defensive line seals those running lanes up the middle, which teams have been doing very well, especially with how porous the offensive line has been for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, one thing that Nick Foles brings to the table that Mike Vick doesn't is that height and that ability to step into the pocket and throw it over those offensive linemen and hit guys at a better angle. So I think this is something that could help Philadelphia, at least in the short term. Eventually, people are going to figure out Nick Foles and the offense they're running with him in it. But it could start a nice little run for them in the back half of the schedule. The question is, how long is that stretch going to be? They do have a couple of difficult matchups still on the schedule, which is going to make things a little more difficult for them. But with that said, I think that Philadelphia can go nowhere but up. So I'm going to say that the team that's hurt most is the Pittsburgh Steelers, because right now they're in the middle of a playoff race. They are going up against they're probably one of the top five teams in the conference twice in the next 3 weeks. And probably they're going to go, and then they're going after San Diego in that fourth week. So those are big games that Pittsburgh can't lose. And let's not forget how well the Cleveland Browns play against divisional opponents. I mean, they took Baltimore to the wire. I think they took Pittsburgh to the wire in their first matchup, if I'm not mistaken. So they're a team that can win against the division. They just don't. And missing the most valuable player on their team, Ben Roethlisberger, and the second most valuable player on their team, Troy Polamalu, can really cause some serious havoc on the Steelers if they're not careful. Now, I expect Leftwich to be better, but not that much better, is my thought on it all. But with that said, I'm going to open up the phone lines, 917-889-9592. Ty, do you have a topic you want to throw out there before we roll into our Fantasy 15?
No, we can get to the Fantasy because a lot of the questions that I do have for the dishes that I want to throw around Sports City do pertain toward the games this week.
Okay, so we're going to start with our Fantasy Football 15-minute segment. We do this because our Fantasy Football show is on Monday, and how many people actually look at their fantasy lineups until Friday or Saturday? So we're going to start with that. The first question comes from Megan. She asks that she's in a salary cap league. Right now, she's paying as much for Ray Rice as Chris Johnson costs right now. Should she drop Ray Rice for Chris Johnson in her salary cap league? And Matt, I'll let you go first.
Well, no, I don't think so. Ray Rice has been a bit of a disappointment to this point. Just in, you know, I said at the start of the season as, you know, a guy that absolutely detests the Ravens and thinks that they're a complete fraud, that without 2,300 all-purpose yards from Ray Rice, that their offense is vanilla ice cream. So Tennessee's got a number of issues, struggles, whereas Baltimore, Ray Rice is such a huge, huge piece to their success, as Chris Johnson is to Tennessee's success. But I think if you can actually just kind of simplify this one, and granted, Tennessee plays in a weaker division, but Ray Rice, it's hard, I guess. You never know what you're going to get from Tennessee. I mean, they went out and beat the hell out of the Dolphins 37-3 last week in Miami, and, I mean, none of us saw that coming at that score. And, you know, the week before, they got their heads kicked in at home by the Bears 51-20. So we never know what you're going to get from the Tennessee Titans, whereas, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, as fraudulent as they may be, in my, you know, humble opinion, they play a bit more consistent, and the approach, you know, I mean, Rice is going to get his touches, and, you know, I think looking at the schedule going forward for the remainder of the year, I just think that Ray Rice, you know, especially depending on what happens tomorrow night. I mean, if they lose to the Steelers tomorrow night, the division is tied. Each game becomes more critical. Each down becomes more critical. And Ray Rice, you know, he's been a bit slow. I mean, he's had, you know, kind of pedestrian numbers to this point. And we're just at the start of the second half of the season, and they're really going to need him to step up and play really great football for them to win. Whereas the Titans, if they continue to struggle, you know, they may shut some things down, which includes, you know, Chris Johnson. So I think just from the standpoint of who's winning and who's losing, Ray Rice is going to be on the field getting the ball, getting touches, whereas, you know, when the Titans are getting clobbered by somebody, you know, Locker's going to be taking off running and trying to make throws, and Chris Johnson isn't going to be as big of a part of the equation. So just my opinion, it's definitely a tough choice, but I would keep Ray Rice.
All right, TP, what are your thoughts?
I'm sticking with Ray Rice by far. Chris Johnson has basically lost the team, if you will. Of course, his speed is big, you know, in the game if he's getting the holes. But his offensive line isn't giving him the holes that he needs, and he's only getting older. It's not like he's getting younger. He's not Benjamin Button at the end of the day. So Ray Rice with a good core around him, and Flacco still learning and growing. They still have young receivers going out for plays, whether it's Torrey Smith, Dan Pitta, who's come onto the scene and been a monster too. There's more weapons around Ray Rice to flourish than there is around Chris Johnson. So I'm sticking with Ray.
See, I'm going to, for the rest of this season, I'm going to go with Chris Johnson for a couple of reasons. First of all, they are the Ravens seem to be turning more of the offense over to Joe Flacco. He has had, as was said, pretty pedestrian numbers for the past couple of weeks especially. I think Chris Johnson is a second-half player. He's a guy that in the first half of the year, he was atrocious. He was bad. He was not getting. He was getting 0 points in certain weeks. But if you look at the past two or three weeks, he's a guy who's been getting 100 yards every week, at least. He even had 250 yards 1 week, and I think that's going to continue for the most part. So I would go and pick up Chris Johnson for the back half of the season. I don't think he's going to slow down too much. If you're considering maybe 100 yards a game for the rest of the season, I think that's about where we're going to see Chris Johnson. Remember, the same thing happened last year. He started out really slow. People thought it was a result of him holding out. And then in the back half of the season, when he had, I think, maybe 300 yards in the first half of the season, he still ended up with over 1,000 yards on the season because of some great performances in the back half. I think we're going to see that again from Chris Johnson. Next question comes from Malaka. He said he has two questions. First, who will do better this week in fantasy, Atlanta's defense versus Arizona or Denver's defense versus San Diego? And I'll take this one first, and I'm going to be alone on this one. I think Denver's defense versus San Diego is your better bet. Yes, I know that before a couple weeks ago, the Arizona's offensive line has been ridiculously bad. But they've changed the dynamic on that offensive line. They're protecting John Skelton better. I think that this is the way to go. I think it's going to be a surprise, but I think Denver's going to have more fantasy points this week. As far as assuming you get bonuses for sacks and things like that, I think you're going to be better off with Denver's defense this week. TP, what are your thoughts?
Strongly disagree. This is a division rivalry game. Plus, the last time that they came out, the Chargers started off on a 24-0 run, but it shut down in the second half. I don't know what happened. I think North Turner got a phone call from the state away from him in Nevada. You know what city I'm talking about. Other than that, Arizona, their offense, all I'm worried about, Fitzgerald, a little bit of Andre Roberts, that's it. Their running game isn't there. Their quarterback play, they can't even figure out what they're going to do with their quarterback situation. Terrible. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they're in Georgia, right? If they're in Georgia, I, by far, I'm going with Atlanta. And I think they get Witherspoon back in the middle of the field, who's actually been a big catalyst to what they've done defensively.
Oh, okay. Matt, what are your thoughts?
You're not alone, Ross. I'm taking Denver's defense. I don't think Atlanta can stop a nosebleed. And
wow.
I think that Arizona is coming. They just had their bye week. So I think, you know, if you want to take a look at, this is their best week of preparation that they've had. They started 4-0 and then totally hit the skids. They're, you know, hanging on by a thread in the NFC West. They're certainly not expected to win this game. But Atlanta hasn't shown me anything defensively that gives me any reason to buy into their defense. And I think Arizona offensively, well, I mean, just altogether with a week off, they're prepared for this game. Whereas San Diego has struggled. I mean, they had a 24-0 lead against Denver 3 weeks ago in San Diego at halftime and gave up 35 unanswered points on 5 Phillip Rivers turnovers in the second half at home. So, I mean, San Diego is not a good football team. They just have a lot of holes. Phillip Rivers, you know, losing LaDainian Tomlinson, that was the beginning of the end. And North Turner is going to be one of the guys that's going to get clipped in New Year's. Denver's got a very favorable schedule. They're red hot. Mile High Stadium, or whatever the hell they call that place, is going to be an absolute zoo. They love Peyton Manning. I mean, he'll get them the early lead. San Diego hasn't been able to stop anybody, and once Denver gets the lead, you can turn – I mean, their John Fox and their defensive coordinator can turn loose and really attack Phillip Rivers with Doomerville and Von Miller, and I would take Denver's defense as well.
Okay, pick one in a 1 point per reception league. The choices are Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis against Kansas City, Malcolm Floyd against Denver, Lance Moore against Oakland, or Torrey Smith against Pittsburgh. They also give the option of trading Torrey Smith for Greg Jennings of the Green Bay Packers. So that is an additional option. TP, I'll let you go first on this one.
If I had to put one in my lineup, I'm going with Lance Moore. Lance Moore up against Oakland. I think they're in Oakland, but still yet, I think this is going to be a shootout. I think this game might be one of those nail-biter situations because a lot of people may think New Orleans is going to run away with it. But still yet, Oakland secondary is the question mark that I have, and they're going to be more or less concerned about how to slow down Colston and Jimmy Graham, and then have to worry about Lance Moore, who's actually been one of Drew Brees' go-to guys. And if Lance can stay healthy and out of harm's way, he's definitely going to flourish in that offense up against that questionable secondary. So I'm going with Lance Moore.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I agree wholeheartedly with TP. I think Lance Moore is the pick among the guys that you mentioned. I think just as he mentioned, Jimmy Graham, you know, up the middle is going to be getting all of Oakland's attention. Lance Moore is going to get a ton of one-on-one. Drew Brees is red hot. Pending that it's not raining or something in Oakland, if the weather's decent, Brees is going to go in there and kill it. I think New Orleans is really hitting their stride right now, trying to make that push for the NFC wild card. They beat Atlanta. Their confidence is sky high. And Lance Moore and Colston are going to be one-on-one all day with, average at best Oakland corners, while Jimmy Graham is attracting all the attention in the middle. I think Lance Moore is an excellent pick for this week.
I have to agree with you guys at this point. I mean, I don't have much faith in anybody from San Diego, so Malcolm Floyd is out. The law firm has not played particularly well for Cincinnati at this point, although they do have a very favorable matchup against Kansas City. I still don't like it. And Torrey Smith has kind of disappeared in the back half of the season, so I would also go with Lance Moore. And we've got one more question. I just have to scroll to. Never mind. That one I already answered. So you have to pick two of these running backs to start this week. Jaquizz Rodgers, Ivory from the New Orleans Saints, or Daryl Richardson, or James Starks of the Green Bay Packers. For me, I would say Daryl Richardson is probably one of the better starts this week. They are going against the Jets, who have not, once again, are a team that aren't playing all that well. Then it gets tough because you might want to go with Jaquizz. He seems to be getting an increased role as the weeks go on for Atlanta. You might want to go with Corey Ivory from the New Orleans Saints, although that's looking a lot more like a running back by committee, so that kind of scares me. So I'm going to say go with Jaquizz Rodgers and Daryl Richardson for this week. While Starks has been getting an increased workload on his own, I think those are going to be the two better fantasy starts. TP, what are your thoughts?
I'm going with Ivory, especially after the last game that he's had. And I'm going with Starks, especially going up against the Detroit defense, where the Lions have not really been too successful going up against the Green Bay Packers. And this is a rivalry game also, and I think the run game will actually loom pretty big. Also going up against the pass with Aaron Rodgers also. So that'll open up a lot of things for the the Green Bay Packers offense. I think Starks and Ivory will be the two pickups that I would take.
All right, Matt, what about you?
Well, like TP said, I would start Chris Ivory. I think that with that spectacular run he made against Atlanta last week, I think he is won over the interim coaching staff of the New Orleans Saints as probably their featured back. I would go with him, and I'll take Jacquizz Rodgers as the other guy. I think that coming off the bye, I think the Packers at Detroit are really going to be looking, you know, the strength of their game is throwing the football, and Starks is a good 15-carry-a-game guy. But if you take a look at the struggles that Arizona has had lately, starting 4-0 and then totally hitting the skids, I think they're going to be, you know, their concentration defensively is going to be trying to stop Roddy White, Julio Jones, Tony Gonzalez, and Michael Turner, the bowling ball up the middle, and that's an opportunity for Jacquizz Rodgers to make plays. So I would take Chris Ivory and Jacquizz Rodgers from Atlanta.
Okay, last question, because I missed it. Tony asks, I'm in a suicide poll, which I have used. Basically, think of every good team. Who is the sneaky pick this week? If you want the list, he's used Atlanta already. Atlanta, Dallas, Houston, Denver, Baltimore, San Francisco, Chicago, and I think they've also got Cincinnati used already and Detroit used already. So of the teams that are left, who would you use in a suicide poll, or who would you most strongly think about for victory this week, TP?
I'm giving away one of my picks early already. I'm going with, did you say Dallas?
Dallas was picked.
Yep,
okay, then my next pick would actually be the Redskins going up against Philly. I'm going with the Skins at home.
All right, Matt, what about you?
Wow, I'm kind of on the – did you say New England? I'm assuming
they did use New England. Yep, they used New England.
Okay. I would take either Tampa Bay, who's red hot, at Carolina, who's struggling mightily, even though it is in Carolina, and it's a divisional game. They know each other very well, but Tampa Bay's played great football over the last 4 weeks. And I would also consider taking the St. Louis Rams at home against the New York Jets, who are just in total demise. So – in a suicide pool, in a risky situation, I think Tampa Bay and St. Louis might be good, plausible options for you.
Yeah, those two are great options. And I also like New Orleans against Oakland. I know they're on the road. That might be something that smells like an upset possibly.
Absolutely. If they haven't used New Orleans yet, I think, I actually missed that one. That would probably be my first choice.
Yeah, I think that's the that's the one you have to go with this week is New Orleans going up against Oakland for this week. I feel that that's probably your best bet for that. So it is time now to break down the games of this week. The call-in number is 917-889-9592. If you want to call in, yell at us, or if you have a question for us, feel free to call in. We'll bring you in. But it's time to break down the games of this week. The first game on the docket is the Philadelphia Eagles going to the Washington Redskins, to play in Washington. Obviously we've already stated that, Michael Vick is going to not play in this game. Jason Avant is considered out, as well as Chris Polk and Marty Gilliard. So they are going to be very thin at the wide receiver position. But they still have Riley Cooper, Jeremy Maclin, and obviously DeSean Jackson. All those guys are fully considered to play. So, and we've also got one questionable to look at, Danny Watkins, the offensive guard, is questionable for this week. But he did participate fully in practice on Friday, so so he should be good to go. As far as Washington's concerned, they are pretty much good to go. Pierre Garçon's questionable with limited participation. He's a game time decision, so especially if you're like me and have him on your fantasy football league, make sure you check the Sunday morning injury report to bring that in. And also, Brandon Merriweather is in the same situation as Pierre Garçon. Questionable limited participation in practice, also a game time decision. We'll start with you, Matt, on this one. How do you feel about this game? Who do you think wins?
I'll take the Redskins in this game at home. I think they're coming off the bye. Mike Shanahan's an excellent coach. You know, they've suffered some disappointment of late, and Philadelphia is in a much bigger crisis and mess than Washington is, I think, although they may be, you know, both have the same record. But I think just from a preparation standpoint, with having the extra week that the Redskins have had, and the way that they're able to run the ball, and with Robert Griffin getting the chance to get healthier for a week, and with Philadelphia replacing quarterbacks and not really knowing, you know, how that's going to work out for them, I think particularly at home, that really benefits the Redskins. I'll take the Skins at home.
All right, TP, what are your thoughts?
I just gave you my thoughts.
Your thoughts are here or mine, don't they?
I'm looking at the quarterback situation. Foles or RG3? You pick for me.
I think I'm going to go with Nick Foles. What do you think, TP?
Hey, I know you like the city of Philly. That's fine. That's fine. But at the end of the day, I'm not comfortable in saying that. So I'm going with the Skins.
I've got the Skins, too, for all the reasons TP said and more. You know, the defense hasn't been playing well in Philly. While I don't think Nick Foles will play that poorly, he's not going to be RG3. Let's just put that out there right now. I think RG3 is going to carry, especially if Pierre Garçon comes back and is healthy. I think that's a pretty big thing as well. So I fully feel that it's going to be a pretty good win for the Washington Redskins this week. And there's not much to not much else to discuss on that. Next game up, Green Bay Packers going to Detroit to play the Lions. And I'll go first on this one, but as far as the injury report is concerned, Terrell Manning, questionable, limited participation in practice with a shoulder injury. Clay Matthews out this week, as well as Charles Woodson and Greg Jennings are both also out this week. Sam Shields is questionable with limited participation in practice this week. So, but there's a lot of talk of him not playing as well. And as far as Detroit is concerned, we've got Louis Delmas listed as doubtful with a knee injury, as well as Amari Spouve, who is out with a concussion. And then finally, Corey Williams, the defensive tackle, is also out this week for a knee injury. Chris Houston is questionable with limited participation in practice. That's something that you're going to have to also take a look at. But outside of that, everybody who was expected to play is going to play. Calvin is listed as questionable with a knee injury again this week. But it all purposes suggest that he's going to be playing on Sunday. So for me, I almost feel like I'm jinxing myself by saying it, but I think the Detroit Lions have a decent chance at winning this game. With all of the defensive players that are going to be out or dinged up for the Green Bay Packers, including three of their better ones, and Clay Matthews, who's arguably their best player. Nick Perry, I also think, is not playing this week. I think he's placed on the injured reserve list. Then if Shields doesn't play as well, I don't think they've got a guy who can cover Calvin Johnson. And when they don't have, when you don't have a guy who can cover Calvin Johnson, you're going to stick two or three guys on him, which is going to open things up for Ryan Broyles and Titus Young, as well as Brandon Pettigrew. So I think this is going to be a high scoring game, but ultimately I think Detroit is going to come out with a win at home. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Well, you make some interesting points, Ross. I hadn't really considered. Initially I was thinking I really want to see how Detroit responds coming off of a very disappointing loss in Minnesota. But I, you know, this is ironically enough the third game in a row that I've talked about where Green Bay is coming off the bye. And that, you know, they've known for, you know, 13 days that they're going to be without Clay Matthews and that they're going to be without Sam Shields and they're going to be without Nick Perry. And I think that, you know, this is a team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. You adjust accordingly. I think you're absolutely correct that they'll roll their coverages over to Calvin Johnson and you force Titus Young and Ryan Broyles and, you know, a soft running game to beat you. And I don't think you want to get in the shootout with Aaron Rodgers. And, I mean, I know Detroit's got Cliff Avril and Kyle VandenBosch and, Ndamukong Suh and these cats that can rush the passer. And they actually rung his bell, you know, 2 years ago in the year that they won the Super Bowl. But Aaron Rodgers knows this team. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best players in the game. They're coming off the bye. They're prepared. You know, Detroit is in kind of deep trouble with having lost the ball game in Minnesota last week. You know, they're in the cellar in the NFC North. And as you mentioned, a high scoring game. You don't want to get in a shootout with Aaron Rodgers. I think the Packers roll.
All right, TP, what are your thoughts?
Wow, I don't want to pick this game. I really don't.
Well, we won't make it. We'll let you go first in the next game, which is Arizona going to Atlanta to play the Falcons.
Beautiful. I'll save my pick for tomorrow. They can come to the brunch and come get a dish there. Now, that dish right there, we're all out of it today. We sold out of cheese and lion meat. We sold out.
So as far as the injury report, Kevin Kolb is out, which means John Skelton can.
Wait! You don't have to give me the injury report. I'm sold. I'm going with Atlanta. You can give the rest of that to Matt if he needs it.
I agree. I don't need the injury report for Arizona at Atlanta. Atlanta's pissed off. They lost to the Saints. Their undefeated record is down the drain now, and I think that takes a lot of pressure off of them. And they're at home. They got Patrick Peterson. He can only cover one guy, Julio Jones, Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez up the middle, the bowling ball, Michael Turner, Jacquizz Rodgers in the screen game. I think Atlanta wins big.
Well, you might want to hear the rest of the injury report because first and foremost, Sean Witherspoon didn't participate in practice on Friday.
He's back.
Julio Jones didn't participate in practice on Friday. Michael Turner was limited in practice on Friday. John Abraham was limited in participation practice on Friday. There's a lot of, he's not important. So
listen, James, let me put it this way. If the Falcons showed up in wheelchairs and crutches, I'm still going with the Falcons.
That's actually, you make some good points. That adds some intrigue to the situation because, you know, say, for instance, if Julio Jones is injured, then, you know, obviously Patrick Peterson is going to be locked up on Roddy White. If Michael Turner's limited, then Jacquizz Rodgers has to carry the load. And Atlanta doesn't run the ball much anyway. But, I mean, Atlanta's offense is just so putrid. Lerod Stevens howling in the screen game or – you know, however they can get him the football, he can be effective. They have who, in my estimation, is the best best player in the NFL and Larry Fitzgerald, and you know he's gonna draw everything that they have. Atlanta's defense isn't very good, but I don't think Arizona's offense is that much, you know, enough to isn't much better, I guess, for lack of a better description. So I'm with TP, man. I'm taking the Falcons on wheelchairs and crutches.
Well, I'm going to say it's going to be close, a lot closer than a lot of people think. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Atlanta. I mean, this is good. I think this is going to come down to a one or two score game. I think that's assuming Julio Jones doesn't give it a go this week, which, I mean, if he didn't practice on Friday, usually that's a good indicator of the player not playing this week. I think that's big, especially if Turner's dinged up as well. That means they're going to be focusing a lot on Jaquizz Rodgers. And I think that this new-look offensive line that the Arizona Cardinals has is going to be able to protect Skelton a lot better than we've seen in weeks past. So with that said, I'm taking Atlanta still, but a closer game than most people would expect. Next up is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to Carolina to play the Panthers. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are, for better or worse, completely healthy, with the exception of obviously those guys on the injury reserve list. The only guy who may not play is Jamin Meredith, who did not participate in practice on Friday. He's an offensive guard who was starting last week, I think, and is listed as questionable, so he may or may not play. Carolina Panthers, also a team, if you take out the guys who are obviously on injured reserve, they are 100% healthy for this game, except for Antoine Applewhite, the defensive end, is considered out for this game. So two healthy teams, divisional matchup. Carolina's at home. It has all of the interesting pieces for a potential upset. TP, do you think there's going to be one?
I'm going with Carolina on the upset. I think them being at home is a comfortable situation for them, and to slowly turning this around. And plus, the Bucs always have a difficult time trying to cover Steve Smith, one of my favorite receivers in the game. I'm hoping that Cam Newton gets it together at home. I'm going with the Panthers. But the one thing that I do worry about, that's a big concern for me up against the Panthers, is the run defense. Their defense altogether is terrible. But if they can go into D.C. and slow up what the Redskins can produce, I think they can go back home and win in a division game. It won't be a comfortable game, but I think Superman can finally take off the blazer and loosen up the tie.
Well, we do have a caller in queue. Caller from the 416. What's your name and how are you doing today?
Good. How you doing? It's Doc from Tailgate Radio.
Hey, Doc. How are you doing today?
Good, man. Just talking to TP over chat. Figured finally call in to you guys after listening for a while.
Hey, that sounds great. Well, if there's anything, well, we discussed a couple of games already. If there's anything out of the ordinary that you think of the games we've talked about already, feel free to put those out, or you can dive right into the Tampa Bay versus Carolina game.
Yeah. Well, first off, TP, how you doing?
I'm all right, brother. How you doing? I see you calling from Canada, huh?
Yeah, I live north of Toronto. Got an office in Buffalo, kind of Canadian-American. I saw you're a Lions fan. I grew up in Detroit and big fan of Chris Spielman, a good friend of Lomas Browns, too. So I'm still teetering to figure out what team I'm seeing here with the Lions. But I have my season ticket holder in Buffalo. Just had the game the other night, and I'm part of the Houdat Nation. I'm a hardcore New Orleans Saints fan, so.
Oh, wow. You're all over the map, huh? We got to settle you down.
Now, I want people in Detroit. I want Detroit to win. I want Buffalo to win just so everybody around me is happy. But I divorced the Buffalo Bills about 8 years ago. I've been part of the Houdat Nation ever since I got a chance to cook for Katrina victims. I went down to travel with the Bills and when they were playing at the Alamo Dome, and the rest is history when they signed Drew Brees. I've only worn two jerseys. One is Chris Spielman, and one's Drew Brees. So, yeah, I didn't mean to call in the middle of your guys' picks there. We do a pick segment on our show, too. Unfortunately, I couldn't be in on it last night, so I'm catching up on my sports today.
Okay, well, sit on down. We got some dishes for you, too.
What game are you guys on right now?
We're doing Tampa Bay rolling up against the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I'm pulling for the Panthers, obviously with the Saints wild card situation. I don't know. I just can't figure out what you're going to get out of the Panthers. The problem is, I'm also a little miffed on how well Tampa's been playing since those catastrophic injuries to lose that kind of. Those kind of linemen, and yet running the ball the way they are, I don't know what you're going to get out of them either. I'm pulling for the Panthers, but I think there's too much firepower right now with the Bucs.
All right, Matt, what about you?
Well, my sentiments are a lot like our callers. I don't know which Carolina team is going to show up every Sunday. I mean, I picked them last week in my upset special to beat Denver, and they just got slaughtered even though they jumped out to a 7-0 lead. Their problem is that, like Atlanta, they can't stop a nosebleed defensively. And Tampa, like TP said, this will be a close ball game. I mean, it's a divisional game. They know each other very well. Although you do have two very young head coaches, Ron Rivera and Greg Schiano. They're both, you know, very early in their tenures with both these teams. And Tampa's been red hot of late. I mean, you know, I think they've won four straight, and you know they're a team that, along with New Orleans chasing Atlanta in the NFC South, are, you know, scratching and fighting and clawing for a playoff spot every week. Whereas I think Carolina is probably one bad day away from thinking about the draft and you know kind of putting this season on the shelf and forgetting about it. They've been a major disappointment. I thought, you know, with Cam Newton having 35 touchdowns last season, I thought for sure they'd be a force in the NFC this year, and it hasn't happened. He's got some growth and immaturity issues that need to be addressed, that he needs to work on in the off season. But if there was going to be a bright spot that they have this season, this could be one of the games. I mean, it's a very tough pick. But I'm going to stick with the Tampa Bay Bucs, as I said for your caller that was looking for a suicide pool pick. I think Tampa, the way they've been running the football lately, and just Carolina not being able to stop anybody, I think that bodes well for Tampa Bay being able to play ball control and getting the W. I haven't seen enough from Carolina to go with them for a while until they show me something. So I'll take the Bucs on the road.
I'm going to agree with you, Matt. I fully expect the Tampa Bay Bucs to win it. They are as complete of an offense as there is in the NFL. I would take, if you consider all aspects of it, I mean, yes, Green Bay has a much better passing game, but their running game is bad. And you can do the same exercise with any offense in the league. I don't think there's a more complete offense in the NFL than the Tampa Bay Bucs, which helps them out a lot. I mean, you got to pick your poison at that point. Do you let Muscle Hamster, you know, run all over you, or do you take away Vincent Jackson? And if you take those two away, then you're stuck leaving Mike Williams open. Eventually, you're going to have to leave one guy one-on-one, and especially if you're talking about Carolina, that's the problem. Because they don't have a corner that can go one-on-one with either of these wide receivers. I think Tampa Bay wins this one pretty handedly. And on the defensive side, yes, Cam is going to be a good player. Yes, he's hit his sophomore slump this season. We should see him significantly better next year. But the problem is, it's this year right now. He's still slumping. They're going to score a few points, but not enough to win the football game. I'm going Tampa Bay. Next on the docket, we've got the Cleveland Browns going to the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to make this one pretty quick. Does anybody think that Dallas has Cleveland has a realistic shot of winning this game? silence?
I'll say yes, they do.
Really? Okay. Then let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I just think I think Cleveland is close. I think they're poorly coached. And obviously they've had a myriad of quarterbacks over the course of the last 10 years. But you know what? They played defense. They were in the top 10 in overall defense last season. They got Phil Taylor back at nose tackle. They got Joe Hayden, who's one of the better corners. And Dallas is bipolar. I mean, Jerry World, you know, this gigantic, ridiculous stadium they play in, hasn't been very kind to them. There's been a lot of inconsistencies. And granted, they're coming off a big win at Philadelphia that is keeping them in, you know, the NFC wild card race, as well as chasing the Giants in the NFC East. But Cleveland will punch you in the mouth. I mean, they're not a team that has a lot of weaponry on, you know, the outside. They have a rookie quarterback, although, you know, he's 29 years old, but they don't have any, you know, weaponry as far as receivers and stuff. It's just a lot of Trent Richardson, and then they try to beat you in the special teams game as well. They have an excellent kicker, but they play defense. And it's not – they're not, you know, a lot of household names, aside from maybe Joe Hayden. But I think Dallas is very inconsistent, and you don't know which team is going to show up every week. I mean, the team that we saw in week one to beat the world champions up in the Meadowlands, is it that team, or is it the team that – we've seen get embarrassed in Seattle this season and get embarrassed at home by the Bears on Monday Night Football? I mean, you, especially at home. I don't think they played particularly well at home. And I won't say Cleveland's going to win the ball game, but I don't think it's a situation where they're going to get their butts handed to them. So I think this has the potential to be a good one.
And you do make an interesting point, and I'll get to the rest of you in a second. Dallas Cowboys are a team, I fully believe, that can beat any team in the league. They can go out there and play against the best teams in the league.
Agreed.
And win. But
they play right to the level of their opponent.
But then again, they can lose to the Cleveland Browns, no problem. They can lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars, no problem. And it's just that kind of mentality that I guess has to destroy Dallas Cowboys fans on a week in and week out basis, because they see the talent on the field. They watched them against the Giants week one, and they do fantastic. They watched them playing against the New York Giants a couple of weeks ago. They almost won it. I mean, that's a very strong New York Giants team. But then they go against Philly, and they don't play well. They go against another team. They don't play well, and it's just mind numbing to see so much talent. And don't get me wrong, the defense is playing well. They're doing what they have to do. But when the defense does their job, the offense doesn't, and vice versa. It seems like a very rare occasion where the Dallas Cowboys put up a complete game, but I think that changes this week against the Cleveland Browns. Doc, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I think the Cowboys are an anomaly. They've been top 5D, top 5-0 the entire year. They're top 10 in quality stats, which I follow a lot of. Don't get me wrong, Cleveland is no pushover. You mentioned Joe Hayden, and I know he's questionable. If he plays, he definitely can take one of those wideouts out of the game. They're favored by a touchdown. I think this is the time where Dallas hasn't had a great record in November, but I think they're pulling it all together now, and they realize they have to. They've got to have two of the three, you know, defense, offense, special teams work together, play a complete game. They should win it by two touchdowns. I don't think Cleveland's going to roll over yet. I think that team has got more meat and potatoes, I think, than we're thinking about. Remind me to ask you, speaking of meat and potatoes, what you guys are eating for the Sunday games. but, yeah, I'm all sports and food. I think it's at least 10 or 14 points. I don't see they, regardless of who's running the ball for Dallas, I think that there's too much firepower right now. I think they know they've got to put it together, and I certainly hope they do, because I think they're the only team, if they don't make the playoffs, can pull my Sean Payton away from my Who Dat Nation. So I'm going to go with the Cowboys.
Excellent.
TP, what are your thoughts?
As much as I want to give that shock value to Cleveland, the only person I see having a decent game is Trent Richardson, possibly. But that secondary, I think they're waking up, and I think they'll make it difficult for Whedon to make a lot of his throws. I got to go with Dallas. I think they get the ball rolling on this game. After this, we'll see how interesting it looks at the doorstep of December.
Not to mention, Tony Romo's been fantastic in November throughout his career. That's a point that our caller made that I had forgotten about. That's an excellent point. That's another excellent reason to take Dallas.
Okay. Next up, we've got the Indianapolis Colts going up. No, we've got the New York Jets going up against the St. Louis Rams. From what I can tell, the only Jeremy Curley is questionable this week. Did not participate in Friday's practice. Everybody else had some sort of participation in practice on Friday and is at the worst questionable. So, but there's such a long list, I don't want to go through them all. As far as St. Louis is concerned, Mario Hagan, linebacker, special teamer, did not participate on practice on Friday with a thigh injury. So, but outside of that, they are relatively healthy. And we'll go to you first, Doc, on this one. What do you think about this game?
Well, I think what you saw with the Rams last week, how tough they played what would be the most physical team in the NFL the last couple of years, I think bodes very well. It's a young and up-and-coming team. Fisher's got them playing with a mindset. I think I just got a feeling right now that Steven Jackson, who's been, you know, he's as great a blitz pickup as there is in the NFL. He's running the ball well. Danny Amendola brings another element to that team. And I don't know who the hell the Jets are. I'll tell you guys a funny story, if I might. I was flying back in preseason. I was flying down to judge the National Collegiate Tailgating Championships in Atlanta. And sitting right across from me on my flight was a guy doing X's and O's on a Jets sheet. It turns out he's assistant to the general manager of the Jets, and we were talking about all the hoopla and the 24-hour ESPN truck parked outside to create all this crap, which is why they're somehow the most vanilla crap football team in the NFL, but we're still talking about them 90% of the time. Not necessarily Tebow, but, you know, foot fetishes and all. I think St. Louis drops – I think St. Louis right now drops these guys like a prom dress. I really do. I think this is a 14-point spread. They're favored by 3.5, but I just don't see what the Jets bring. I don't think they bring anything. I think St. Louis has got to develop a home advantage. I think with a healthy team and a healthy Amendola, even with half a shoulder, he's going to have 11, 12 catches and be the difference maker. I think they win it by 14.
Wow. I love it. I love it.
And you know what? I'm going to go right there with you. The Jets are horrible. Early in this show, I called them one of, if not the worst team in the NFL. They are imploding again, and it comes back to the coach. Yes, the talent is bad. I'm well aware that the talent is bad on this team when you take out the two best players on this team. Well, that's not an offensive lineman, and Holmes and Revis. But still, even with all these problems, they shouldn't be imploding like this. They should not be collapsing in and on themselves. And it has a lot to do with being in New York, the as you said, the 24-hour news cycle that happens around Jets practices and whatnot. But at the end of the day, what we see is a team that's pretty much given up. It seems as though they've given up on the field. They know they're not making the playoffs, and I think at the end of the day, Rex Ryan knows he's not going to be the head coach any longer. So, on the other hand, there's a team in the St. Louis Rams who has good coaching, and Jeff Fisher, and they're a young team that's seeing themselves getting better. And they see themselves being in a position next season to honestly be in the running for that division. And I honestly believe that. So I think one team's trending up, the other's trending down. I'm going with St. Louis to put a thorough beating on the New York Jets. TP, what about you?
This is a tough game. This could be a trap game, man. As much as I want to say the Rams too, I am going to go with the St. Louis Rams. At the end of the day, I don't think the Jets could come into St. Louis and beat a Rams team that I think has a better potential quarterback in Bradford of going up against Sanchez. Even though I know Sanchez will make this a game, I think that the balance attack that the Rams will have in this game will probably storm some questions for that Jets defense. And at the end of the day, I don't know if it'll be a two-touchdown game, Doc, but I think the Rams will win this game and get things moving, if you will, to stay relevant in the NFC West.
All right, yeah. Matt, you're up on this. What are your thoughts?
I agree wholeheartedly with all three of you. I think those excellent points being made. I think that you're absolutely right, Broth, that the Jets have given up. They're, you know, a team that's going to be in transition and change at the end of the year, whereas Jeff Fisher is licking his chops as his team just gets better and better and better and better, and they're going to get draft picks for what they got for Robert Griffin. And I like the Jets big in this one also. I think, you know, the media is a total distraction for New York. We may see more of Tebow in this particular game, but it's in the dome. It's on the road. St. Louis is hungry. I mean, they're not a playoff team, but their fans know that they're a team that's on its way. So, I mean, they're going to be there. They're going to be loud. I like the Rams at home. I'll take them by 10 at least.
Okay, so next game up, we do have a good 30 minutes left. Call number is 1-917-889-9592. So, next game up, Indianapolis Colts going to New England to play the Patriots. Colby Fleener out this week. Vontae Davis out this week as well. I don't bother reading Bill Belichick's injury reports. They're so cryptic and just beyond my comprehension that I just skip it. So I might as well go first on this one. The Indianapolis Colts have played well. They've played well for the past few weeks, and they even beat a Green Bay Packers team. But this is the point in the season where New England ramps up. They're getting themselves ready for the playoffs. I believe Aqib Talib, whom they just traded for, is getting off suspension. He's going to be ready to play.
Yeah, he's activated.
I think that's going to be too much it's going to be too much for Indianapolis to handle at the end of it all. Plus, I believe it is at New England as well. That's only going to help New England's progress. The one thing that I am going to say, though, Logan Mankins is listed as doubtful for this week. He didn't participate in practice on Friday. That could be a big deal. That could be something that's exploited with a couple of inside blitzes, and that is something that doesn't that Tom Brady still has problems with. That those double blitzes up the middle, and those kind of overloads up the middle, and that leaves a little opening for Indianapolis to pull something off, but not much. I'll go to you next, TP. What are your thoughts?
We all remember this show. James, you know how I do, man. There's a story of a guy named Brady. And at the end of the day, the real number 12 will stand up. Luck will make this a good game. I'm not even going to count Andrew Luck out. Andrew Luck has been playing some good football. But at the end of the day, they're going into Foxborough. The Patriots have already taken their surprise loss at home, sleeping on an Arizona Cardinal team, which I know 10 times out of 10 they should be beating the crap out of the Cardinals. The Cardinals came in, and if Gostkowski doesn't miss that game-winning field goal, that's a win for the Patriots. The Patriots keep rolling, and the defensive issues on the Colts side of the ball will loom, going up against so many facets of the game for the New England Patriots, whether it's Gronkowski, Hernandez, Wes Welker, and the guy coming out of the backfield. Whoever runs the ball seems to be successful in that system. I'm going with the Patriots at home in Gillette Stadium.
All right, Doc, what do you think?
Well, I think one thing stands out like a sore thumb. I think Indianapolis, first off, doesn't stop the run, and New England's always, right now, I think a little something unseen. They run the ball very well, and the way to neutralize Mathis and to neutralize the blitzers, too, you know, they got to run the ball. And New England could be the whitest offense in the history of the NFL. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at that. Not the race has anything to do with it, but really you got to look at this. Brady's numbers this year, they're not Aaron Rodgers' numbers, but I'll tell you what, he's almost mirroring last year, and that's unbelievable. And I think we get so sick of saying the guy's name, we forget his greatness. And as big of a metrosexual as I think Tom Brady is and what I think of him off the field, he is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever lived, and he is having another monstrous year. There's way too much firepower right now. I think a magical story is happening in Indianapolis. I think he can play with inspiration. It's all self-motivating. I just don't think they've got the horses right now to run with Indy, especially at home. Indy at home is stupid record for the last 4 years. I think it remains the same. It's 8.5, 9. I'm going to give it 2 touchdowns. I think Andrew Luck will put points on the board. I think the chemistry with him and Reggie Wayne is almost greater right now than it was with Peyton Manning, even in his heyday. And I think he'll put up maybe 3 touchdowns, but just not enough to stay with those horses in New England.
All right, Matt, what are your thoughts?
Well, again, great points from everyone. Who would have thought in the middle of November that Indianapolis at New England would have major AFC playoff implications? It's kind of intriguing, but I you know, like TP said, the real number 12 is going to – this is where New England is a Super Bowl team. They aspire to be a Super Bowl team, and this is where it starts, is the second half of the season, and Andrew Luck is going to get a lesson. He's the most, quote, NFL-ready quarterback to come into the game since Peyton Manning. Well, he's going to get – this is going to be his first lesson in how to win, you know, an important regular season game. Although, like you said, they've beaten the Packers, but they're on the road. You know, their strength defensively is Freeney and Mathis on the outside. Logan Mankins, you know, he may be gone on the inside, but – with Ridley and Boyden, whatever his name is, Brandon Boyden, they're running the football well, and they're not the best defensive team in the AFC. But Andrew Luck doesn't do anything spectacular enough to exploit that. I mean, everything is 7 and 8 yard throws, and like Mark said, it's a very inspirational story with Chuck Pagano, what's going on with their team, the way that they're all rallying and coming together. But they're going into the lion's den, and I think their inexperience on both sides of the football will shine. I think, you know, like Tom Brady, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I think he's a metrosexual, but my personal opinion of his character has nothing to do with his greatness. He is without question one of the greatest of all time, and New England needs this win. They didn't play a great first half of the season, and I think they get this W on Sunday.
Why does everybody have this big deal with Tom Brady? Yeah, probably
the best. He's a homo.
He has a sexy wife that he's been doing some things to.
Well, I'd rather be a metrosexual if I was married to something like that too. So
there you go. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're going to move on. We've got about 21 minutes left, so I'm going to kind of skip our way to some of the bigger games and the more interesting games of the week. So I'm going to go to San Diego, going to Denver to play the Broncos. This is a big game. San Diego's playoff hopes kind of ride on this game. If they drop another one, it's going to be really tough in the last 6 weeks to get the requisite wins needed to, because they'll have to win 5 out of the last 6 if they don't win this one this week. Which, with the way they've been playing, is not looking very good. As far as injury report goes, Jared Gaither, doubtful this week with a groin injury, which is he has not been playing for the past couple of weeks. Brio Franklin, nose tackle, out this week with a knee injury, and finally, Tracy Porter for the Denver Broncos out again this week. He was out for the past couple of weeks, and Chris Cooper, offensive guard, doubtful for this week. So we'll go to you first, Matt, on this one. How do you feel about this game?
Well, these two teams played a few weeks ago in San Diego on Thursday Night Football, or Monday Night Football, whatever it was, and, you know, San Diego blew a 24-0 halftime lead with 35 unanswered points from Denver in the second half, five turnovers from the Chargers. I think the Chargers are really hitting the skids. I think that Denver has a real – I mean, they're red hot. They have a very legit opportunity with a favorable schedule in the second half to probably end up as the one or two seed in the AFC along with Houston. And I don't see this as a game where, you know, they lose at home to Phillip Rivers. I think Manning takes care of business. I think Denver takes care of business at home.
Doc, what about yourself?
Yeah, it's going to be a beatdown. Denver, you know, there's just something about that air up there. I mean, Saints a couple weeks ago was doing all the physiological monitoring of catching your breath. My God, it's already tough enough to play there. And ironically, no pun intended, San Diego's loses. They've got no steam left at all from what I see. I'm just going to go with a beatdown. I think they're favored by 8. I'm saying this is a 2-touchdown game. I think San Diego's finally putting it to bed. This is the end of the era. And you know, Phillip Rivers is killing me in fantasy, so he might as well keep killing me. I'm going to go Denver by 14.
I'm going to agree with the two of you on this one. The way I see it, San Diego is just not a good team. They have been constantly losing talent since Marty Schottenheimer left, and it's repetitive. It's just sad. A.J. Smith and Norv Turner will both be gone this season, and San Diego Chargers will be much better for it. But at the end, there's just too much of a discrepancy in talent. Let's put it this way. The Denver Broncos had the better quarterback, better offensive line, better wide receivers, better cornerbacks, better linebackers, better defensive line. Across the board. Maybe with the exception of running back, although Willis McGahee and Ryan Matthews, I don't think there's that big of a difference. But across the board, Denver's the better football team. There's no matchups that can be exploited very well. Antonio Gates might be the one saving grace, but he's been kind of struggling since his foot injury. He's still playing well, but he's not playing like Antonio Gates of a couple of years ago. And it's just all going Denver's way. They're too, and the momentum's also going their way. It's just all pointing to Denver for me, so I'm going with Denver. TP, what are your thoughts?
Back in the 70s, you know, there was a guy named Isaac Turner, and he married a girl. Her name was Anna May. She slowly changed her name to Tina. With that being said, they had a classic song, and I'm not leaving this song alone. And the reason why I'm doing that is because I feel like they could turn it around. So, big wheels keep on turning, brown Betty keep on burning. I'm rolling with that river. And this is a rivalry game, one. Two, this has to be makeup for what happened in San Diego, for them to storm out and get those points. I still think that they could put points up on that Denver defense, regardless of how people may look at it. Phillip Rivers just can't have that come out of halftime, second half turnover situation, because it's just crazy how they run stuff. And I think Ryan Matthews will be the X factor in this game. He still can get into space and make some things happen. I'm rolling on a river.
Poetic.
Oh, boy. Okay, so with that said, we are moving on. to the Baltimore Ravens going to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers. No Ben Roethlisberger this week. For as far as other injury concerns, Parnell McPhee out this week, or doubtful this week with a thigh injury. Jimmy Smith out this week. That leaves the Baltimore Ravens down two corners. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. And Christian Thompson, I believe he's the backup safety, special teams guy, who also out with, is questionable but did not participate in Friday's practice with a knee injury as well. As far as the Pittsburgh Steelers, Marcus Gilbert, the starting left tackle, out this week. Troy Polamalu, Antonio Brown, is that right? Yes,
Antonio Brown is probably going to be a game-time decision. He's been limited in practice all week, didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, and he'll probably just see how he feels on Monday. If not, Emmanuel Sanders will get the start.
As of right now, Antonio Brown is listed as out as of Friday on his practice, and he did not participate in practice on Friday, so expect him not to play. Ben Roethlisberger also out. So there's a lot of trouble going on there in Pittsburgh. I thought this was going to be if everybody was healthy, this would have been one of the classic games of the rivalry, but it's not. And it just seems like they're missing too much in Pittsburgh to honestly put this up. It's going to take a very bad performance by Joe Flacco. You know, a couple of interceptions. They're starting to put that offense into his hands again. It's going to take a very bad performance by him or those wide receivers or something to make this into a close game, I think. I think this is going to go Baltimore's way, particularly because, yes, it is in Pittsburgh, but still, overall, without Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers actually have a winning record. Against the Ravens, on the other hand, they haven't won a game when Big Ben has not been playing. I'm going with Pittsburgh in this game. Matt, I'll let you go next.
You mean you're going with Baltimore in this game?
Yeah, I'm going with Baltimore, yeah.
Okay.
You just said Pittsburgh.
I messed that up.
You know what? You guys throw it around. I'm going to go last.
All right, then I'll go to you, Doc, on this one. What are your thoughts?
Pretty simple, guys. I'll keep it short. You said it right. Pittsburgh's learned to play without Roethlisberger. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think the problem is Leftwich. I mean, I got a hard time watching the guy. I know they can take advantage of the speed on the outside. I think all the runners, I don't care who's running the ball for the Steelers, they're all road graders. Jonathan Dwyer, I think Baltimore's not been able to stop the run. That being said, the X factor this week is Ray Rice. He's going to put them over the top. I think the wideouts are spreading the field enough that it'll open up things for him. I think this is going to be a typical game, a 17-16, 21-20, a slobber knocker, nice fall wind in the air in Pittsburgh. But I think there's right now just too many injuries on the Steeler front. I'm going to give it to the Ravens by a single point.
Whoa!
Whoa! He's definitely going closer than I am. What about you, TV?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Well, you know what college I support, and there's a couple of them on that team. Even though there's one with a terrible towel and Spence, even though he doesn't get any time because there's so many linebackers out there in Pittsburgh, but still, yeah, like I said earlier. I like Leftwich, but not in this game. He'd have to play up against a defense that has some loopholes, if you will, or some subtle situations where he could be calm back there. And I think he'll be erratic all game trying to make some throws. And if he's trying to make passes while he's mobile and trying to load up that pass, I find it very difficult for Pittsburgh to pull it off. And Mendenhall trying to shake his rust off up against a good defense in Baltimore. I'm going with the Purple and Black, U City.
All right. Thus far, Matt, 3-0 in favor of Baltimore, even if one of them is by a single point.
Yeah, that seemed to be the consensus throughout the course
of the
week.
Rashard Mendenhall is expected to be back this week. What are your thoughts?
Well, that seems to be the consensus throughout the course of the week among all the polls that I've read, is that without a healthy Ben Roethlisberger, we have no chance to win this football game. There's a factor in this game that people are, that if you don't have an emotional stake in either team, you're not going to recognize, but it plays huge into, Doc said it best, that's why it's going to be a slobber knocker one-point game. It's emotion. Emotion. There is a bitterness and hatred of the likes never seen before between these two ball clubs. I mean, Baltimore aspires to have what Pittsburgh has done. I mean, I bark and, you know, banter and rant with their fan base all the time on Facebook. They manipulate anything, any way they can to try to equate 3 Super Bowls in 7 seasons and that Flacco is somehow better than Ben Roethlisberger. I agree with Doc that this is the tough situation here. See, I hope Charlie Batch is ready to go, because Leftwich's windup just killed me. It killed me because you got to get the ball out. That's been the basis of Steeler football this entire season. That's why Todd Haley was brought in, was to protect Ben Roethlisberger so that we have a healthy Ben Roethlisberger in January. And if you have a healthy Ben Roethlisberger in January, the Steelers can beat anyone, anywhere. And without Antonio Brown, without Troy Polamalu, without Big Ben, these are huge, huge pieces. But they're without Ray Lewis, Ladarius Webb, Jimmy Smith. So it's I mean, both sides are diluted. I trust Todd Haley more than I trust Cam Cameron. I think Joe Flacco absolutely sucks. I think he's an absolutely average, middle-of-the-pack quarterback. Granted, our corners, our secondary isn't the greatest in the league, but our entire defense is predicated on pressure. So it's going to be, you know, huge responsibility stopping Ray Rice and also with Woodley and Harrison and Lawrence Timmons and Larry Foote to get to Joe Flacco. I think that's absolutely huge. Field position is going to be huge. There's going to be a lot of punts. There's going to be a lot of just playing chess. But here's the thing is I think that among men, see, I don't know, coming on, you don't mess around with Achilles. You know, Terrell Suggs is back and he's improving week by week by week, but Mendenhall is getting thrown to the wolves here, so I don't think we're going to see him getting the bulk of the carries. I think, you know, I think Isaac Redman and Jonathan Dwyer, if healthy, and Chris Rainey, I think you'll see probably get a lot more touches than Mendenhall will be getting if that's the approach. The thing with Leftwich, he missed Mike Wallace, who can run right past anyone's secondary in the NFL, twice deep on Monday night against Kansas City. And that was just a gut-wrenching nightmare for me, that entire ball game, because these bad teams always screw up our season. Last year it was Cleveland that smashed Ben's ankle and, you know, inevitably led to our demise. This last week it was Kansas City, you know, a desperate team on Monday Night Football injured our, you know, MVP-caliber quarterback. Byron Leftwich would just... We run a lot of, like, bubble and jailbreak screens, you know, with speed guys, with Wallace and Sanders. And if no, Antonio Brown kills it, he's a Pro Bowler. So it's Jericho Cotchery. You know, Ben's rapport with Heath Miller, I don't know that Leftwich will have the same. You know, I mean, Heath Miller was having an all-pro year up to this point. He's going to be without Big Ben. I mean, I think that hinders his, you know, his performance. If we can run the ball against the league's 26th-ranked run defense effectively, we're going to force their hand. We're going to make John Harbaugh stick 8 or 9 guys in the box, and they're probably going to do this anyway and make Byron Leftwich beat you. And albeit, you know, the guy hasn't had a start since 2009, but if there's one thing that he can do well in this game is throw the ball deep. And if we can get our crank up our running game, and, you know, force Baltimore to cheat their safeties up to the line of scrimmage, Ed Reed, and, you know, force them to play closer to the line of scrimmage, I think there's a possibility that Mike Wallace can get loose and Byron can throw one deep and we can, you know, hit Big Six. That place is going to be an absolute insane asylum on Sunday night, Heinz Field. We hate this team. We hate their guts. It's unbelievable. There's fights in the parking lot. It's like nothing you've ever seen. I've never in my life wanted a regular season game more than I want this one. And we put ourselves in a position by losing early in the season in Oakland and in Tennessee to where we need to sweep Baltimore. And if we don't, you know, there's a very strong possibility that you shut down Ben Roethlisberger for the season and, you know, wrap it up. And he's having an MVP caliber year, so it's tragic. I mean, not only the SC shoulder sprain, but also the rib injury that's close to his aorta. And you don't play around with a guy's heart, you know. I mean, ask Hank Gather's family, ask Reggie Lewis's family. So
all right,
I don't even know.
We do have 5 minutes left, and I do want to get this last game in. I mean, I'm not too concerned about talking about Jacksonville and Houston all that much, but I really want to get into
I'm taking the Steelers. I'll leave it there.
All right, you're taking the Steelers, but we need to move on to the Monday night game, because that's the big game. This is the game
Huge.
Of the week. And right now. Obviously, the injury report does not give a final say on who's playing and who's not. But all consensus is Jay Cutler's out, Alex Smith is in, which means Jason Campbell is obviously they're going to be the starting quarterback for the Bears. Doc, I'll let you go first, and then give us a plug for your show while you're at it.
Yeah, no problem. We'll talk again. Alex Smith hasn't been cleared to play, even though he partially practiced Friday. I don't know. I got no trust in Jason Campbell. He's just vanilla. I'm sorry. I think that Cutler, regardless of that dumb decision he made last week, throwing that ball across the line and getting absolutely lambasted, is going to hurt this team down the road. You don't mess around with concussions. That being said, I think Chicago keeps it close. Peanut Tillman, as far as I'm concerned, is as much an MVP candidate, at least defensive player of the year. The defensive said their turnover margin is just astronomical. I have nothing been like it in the last 20 years in the NFL. It keeps it close. That being said, I think this has got to be a statement game for Frisco. I think they run the ball very well. And regardless of Kaepernick, whoever's taking snaps, I don't think it has anything to do with the passing game. I think they do enough on the ground to win. I think their special teams are right now better. I hope it's a close game, but I think somehow, some way, it's going to be about 3 points, and it's going to go Frisco's way. I just don't trust Jason Campbell.
All right, TP, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with San Francisco, Candlestick Park, and that grass. Even though the Bears play on some crazy grass as well out there in Chicago, I just really feel comfortable with the weapons going up against that Chicago defense. It's not like Lance Briggs and Urlacher are going to be in the middle of the field and shutting down the run, but they have to worry about more than just what Frank Gore is going to be coming out of the backfield with. Vernon Davis, Manningham, you already know the two words that I love so much, Randy Moss and company, and this is where this offense needs to start flying. I'm going with San Francisco.
For me, it's going to come down to turnovers, as it always does. When Chicago wins the turnover battle, they win the football game. The two games that they've lost were based on them not winning the turnover battle. So, and San Francisco is another team that takes care of the ball very well, and that's what's going to come down to. Can Alex Smith, with some limited practice, you know, come in and or Colin Kaepernick come in and play with the Chicago, with that Chicago Bears defense, and not turn the ball over? That's more important than probably even more important than scoring points to an extent. Not turning over the ball wins the football game for the San Francisco 49ers. That's why I'm going with them. Matt, give us your thoughts on this.
Well, this is a huge, huge game. I mean, both teams are in first place, and both teams need the W, and both teams have a team right behind them breathing down their neck. I agree with Doc wholeheartedly. Jason Campbell just sucks. He sucked in Oakland. He sucked in Washington. I mean, Brandon Marshall's a fantastic player, but Jay Cutler can get him the football, and Jason Campbell can't. I think that, as great as the Bear defense has played this season, I think San Francisco with the conservative offense they play and being able, if they can run the football effectively, that might set up some things down the field for Crabtree and Moss and Vernon Davis. But two great kickers in this game, David Akers and Robbie Gold, they're both money. I think we'll probably see a lot of field goals. I think field position and turnover battle, like you said, Broth, are both going to come into play. And I could totally see like a touchdown not even being scored in this game. I could see a 12-9 ball game, and you know, 12-9 49ers.
Hey, Randy Moss has a career of scoring touchdowns on Monday night. You share the same birthday as him.
Yep, he was born the exact same day.
Well, it is. It's time for us to leave the show. I want to thank everybody for coming on. We'll give one more time around, give a final shout out and stuff like, and promote yourself. We'll start with you, Doc. Give us a final shout out. Any big bold predictions you want for the upcoming NFL week, and also give a promotion to whatever shows you're on.
Yeah, listen, I got a full network. You can reach me at tailgateradio.com. Formerly of SiriusXM, I had the first national tailgate radio program. All the sports and food boys, and it's very much a pleasure to talk to you guys. You guys know your stuff. I'm glad to know you're on Saturday afternoons. It's kind of my football void. I think my last prediction, Raiders keep it close, even though they're decimated in the secondary, and Breeze, by all accounts, should put up 45 points. I still think somehow that anemic defense with the Saints Nation keeps the Raiders in the game. I think New Orleans pulls it out, but I think it's going to be a hell of a lot closer. I think it'll be a track meet, though.
All right. All right, Matt, go ahead. Give us a final shout-out and anything else you want to say.
All right. Well, just, Doc, great to meet you. Great to talk to you. You excellent talk sports with. I'll definitely be checking out your radio website. And thanks for having me on the show today, fellas. All my Steeler buddies out there, right now, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, the 2008/9 AFC Championship, Baltimore at Pittsburgh, is on NFL replay. That was a fun day for us. So if you want to go down memory lane, turn on NFL Network right now, kickoff. But I hope everybody enjoys Week 11. Have a safe weekend, and I'll talk to you tomorrow morning on the Sunday brunch. And thanks for having me on the show, gentlemen.
All right, TP, give us a final shout before we close down the kitchen.
Well, listen to Matt Palmer giving my commercial breakout. That's a beautiful thing. I really don't have to do it now. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. 7 days a week, we stay busy. I'll be back on this show, co-hosting with my main man, Mark Mosley, Sunday brunching it up. This is for everybody out there. Thanks to Matt Palmer calling from the Pacific area. Thanks to Doc calling from Canada, or wherever you are in the world or the country or the continent, however you may put it together, we are doing it in Sports City, putting these dishes together. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know. Wait. Before I go, my thoughts and prayers are with the guy that passed away at the Buffalo game. That's the sick situation. That's just sick. And my thoughts and prayers are with Mike Ditka. Get a recovery. Get out of that hospital soon.
Get well soon, Mike Ditka. As it is, TP already said it. Check out SportsCityChefs.com. We'll do better next week. Thanks for listening.